From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1954, marking what many consider the birth of photovoltaic technology in the United States. Daryl Chapin, Kelvin Fuller, and Gerald Pearson developing the silicon photovoltaic cell at Bell Labs, the first solar cell capable of converting enough of the sun's energy into power that can run some everyday electrical equipment. So you could say 60 years later we've come a long way. But you might also wonder if solar power will ever develop into a more widely used or easily available source of energy. This hour, we look at the current solar boom. We ask what's next. Are costs coming down for companies? For consumers, is solar a viable competitor with fossil fuels? Are there tax credits or other incentives available for homeowners and businesses? Our solar roundtable is here to cover multiple angles on this story. We welcome Dave Levy, who's the Director of Research and Technology at NatCore Technologies in Rochester. Dave, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And for our listeners, in a moment, we're going to ask them to explain more of the background of their companies and what they do. I'll also welcome Sam Mason, who is the Solar Project Facilitator for SED, that's Sustainable Energy Development, based in Ontario.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. We appreciate your time. Susan Spencer's here, a solar scientist, the director and founder of RockSpot, and you can find more at rochesterspot.org. That's a nonprofit dedicated to development and implementation of the Rochester Solar Initiative. We're going to be getting into that. Susan, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And on the line with us is Dick Swanson, the founder of SunPower, one of the world leaders in silicon solar cells and modules, and Dick, in many ways, considered a legend in the industry. Dick, thank you for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me. It's nice to be here.
And Dick, tell us a little bit about, for most of our listeners, again, if they're not savvy with the solar industry, they may not know about SunPower. Tell us a little bit of the background and the history of the company.
Well, SunPower was created to commercialize technology that was developed at Stanford University. It was a high-efficiency silicon solar cell that produced about 50% more power for a given size than the typical solar cell. And so SunPower was sort of a spin out from Stanford, got funding in 1991, and sort of wandered in the woods for about 10 years trying to figure out how to commercialize solar technology. Really took off when we teamed up with a local semiconductor company called Cypress Semiconductor to fund a factory. And Cypress helped us build the first factories. They were experienced in manufacturing chips for computers, and the manufacture of a solar cell in many ways is similar to that. So then we went public in 2005. We were the first of the modern companies in PV to go public, and the market really started taking off after that.
We're looking now at the solar boom this hour and trying to answer a lot of commonly held questions, whether you're a homeowner or a business owner or someone who works at a company that's interested in solar technology. And everything I'm reading indicates, number one, that yes, there's a boom going on, but we're not quite at a point where solar is, at least not today, is not competing with fossil fuels. Maybe we're on the curve or on the way to doing that. Right now, Susan Spencer, I'm reading that solar energy accounts for 0.5% of American energy usage. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And yet, solar energy is already eclipsing the coal industry in terms of people who work in that industry. So how does that wash? How does that make sense?
Well, I think the thing that we need to consider is that the demand for solar has increased exponentially in the last 2 years. So this has created an enormous boom in terms of manufacturing and research and development that installation is now catching up with. So as we manufacture more and more of the panels, there's more and more of a demand. The cost continues to come down, and more of it is going to be able to be installed. So I think the U.S. Energy Information Administration annual energy outlook predicts that we're going to be going from 8 gigawatts of renewable energy capacity in 2012 to more than 48 gigawatts in 2040. So this is truly an explosive industry.
In other words, a lot of the jobs that are currently there are essentially setting up an industry that's about to take off. And Dick Swanson, for you and seeing the industry over the years, is it a surprise that it's taken this long for solar to take off? And as a follow-up, then, do you think that this is the moment that we start to see those numbers greatly increase?
Yeah, well, actually, it's been growing at a fairly constant rate since I got into it in 1975. So from that perspective, it's always been a growth industry. It's just been very, very small. So as Susan said, we're right on the cusp now where with the installations doubling every 2 years or so, we're right on the cusp where you can begin to see it. So while 0.5% does not sound like that much, it'll be 1% shortly and then 2%, and that will continue on growing to, I think most of us in the industry feel at least 20% of the U.S. electric generation will come from PV by 2020 or 2030. So, yeah, it did take a lot longer, I have to admit. I didn't expect to retire when it was just taking off. Really, our original business plan that we sold to the venture community had it happening much, much quicker. But in retrospect, I think it happened about as fast as it could. It just takes time to develop the technologies and scale them to the point that you can have an impact in an industry as large as the energy industry.
Let me ask our other guests in studio here, and I'll start with Dave Levy, who's the Director of Research and Technology at NatCore Technologies, based in Rochester, Dave.
Based in Rochester.
You don't produce solar cells, but you do the research for companies that do. Give me a sense for what your role in the industry is.
Yeah, so what we're trying to do at NatCore is, actually, we're not necessarily based in Rochester, but our center of mass is here. Mm-hmm. We have a couple technologies that we're looking at right now that will hopefully improve the cost structure of manufacturing solar cells. We have a technology that known as black silicon that we feel is going to be a cheaper alternative for anti-reflection technologies for typical solar cells as well as more advanced structure solar cells. And the other thing we're working on, which is actually most of our time right now, is a process of using lasers to create solar cells to do certain processes of the solar cell. And that one also we feel is a technology that could improve solar cells while also reducing manufacturing costs. So a company like NatCore, what we're ended up doing then is we're not actually planning to make solar cells or to make panels, but we want to develop technologies, patent those technologies, and then either try to sell them directly to manufacturers or look to partnering with companies, for instance, an equipment manufacturer to take one of our technologies to the market.
And your clients are where, for example?
Our clients could be anywhere. We're still pre-product at the moment right now. And a client, for instance, we're doing some trials with an Asian manufacturer at the moment. And, you know, we may work with equipment manufacturers there's a number of European-based equipment manufacturers who we could work with. So at the moment, we're a relatively small group developing the technologies, and we're really, we'd really go anywhere we could. Having said that, I hope also that in our plans is the ability at least to do some pilot scale manufacturing or pilot scale demonstration of our technologies here. We have the facilities to do it. And, I think I just as a statement about Rochester also are pretty much where we stand right now. All of our growth of NatCore from this point going forward is likely to be in Rochester. And so, I hope we can expand in that sense.
And forgive me for the ignorance here. You can answer this, and I'm sure Susan can jump in as well with this, but a lot of people will wonder then, NatCore is helping produce technology that will result in panels for homeowners, for businesses. Are there differences? Give me a sense for that.
Yeah, I think that there's probably not differences from our perspective. Okay. The technologies that we would develop would help out in the cell manufacturing. You would start with some silicon, and then you would turn that into cells, and then those cells would be assembled into a panel. Most of the technologies that we're looking at right now would be in that middle part in the cell manufacture. And so I think that ultimately, and I don't understand the market perhaps well enough to say exactly, but I think those would go to any of the possible end uses.
Let me also bring in Sam Mason, who's the solar project facilitator for SED, that's Sustainable Energy Developments in Ontario. You've been around for how long, the company?
The company was founded 12 years ago and has been in the wind industry, actually, up until the present moment. We launched our commercial solar side about 2 years ago and residential about a year before, a year ago.
Okay, so relatively new, and a lot of our listeners will be familiar with some of the visuals of the wind energy up in Ontario. But now on the solar side, you're a solar project facilitator. What does that mean? What do you do?
Well, when I was brought on, I came from Colorado where I cut my teeth in the solar industry. And as the token solar guy among a bunch of windsmiths, I play a number of different roles, one of which is project management and kind of traditional site supervisor roles, and as well as developing the residential solar side of the business.
Residential solar side, homeowners who want solar installation.
Correct.
And from what I've read, the cost for an average home, and I don't even know what that means anymore, but the cost for an average home in terms of solar installation is now just under $30,000. I don't know if that's accurate or not, if that's the latest figure. It certainly has come down. Where do you see the average? And that's a big common question I'm sure you get, Sam. What's the cost?
Yeah, that's the big common question that almost anyone in the solar industry dodges politely with it depends, just based on your budget, your available roof space, what your actual usage is. The big takeaway though is that solar is so scalable that you can design a system that fits any roof space or any budget. But I would say since I started 8 years ago, they're about they cost easily about half as much as they used to. Just since I've started the industry. And I'm not a veteran, per se, by any means.
Well, let me ask Dick then. If the answer is it depends, and I get why it depends, but give me a sense for what you've seen in four decades now in terms of the cost. And for a lot of skeptics, that's always been a barrier to entry on this, Dick, whether it's a company or a homeowner who thinks it's just not, there's not a good ROI on this. How have you seen that change?
Well, in making the modules, we've seen tremendous cost reductions. When in 1975, when I got into the industry, modules were $40 per watt, and today they dropped down to less than $1 per watt. Mm-hmm. So it's been a huge ride that almost nobody predicted was even possible. I think the industry was managed to get cost out of making solar modules at a much faster pace than any of the pundits ever predicted would be possible. However, the rest of the system, what we call the balance of system and the soft costs, have not come down as much. So we have a situation today in residential systems where the module itself is actually not the larger part of the overall cost of the system. It's the installation and sales and design and that sort of thing. And so the spotlight has really moved to the installers at this point to drive down costs, which there's been tremendous progress being made. For example, in Germany, it costs much less to install a panel on your home than it does in the U.S., and the reason for that is simply that Germany has much more experience with it. So I think the U.S. installers are rapidly catching up, and the U.S. government has recognized that, and the major photovoltaic research programs within the U.S. government have been trundled over to focus more on these soft costs within the system and trying to understand how to get solar into the grid system cost effectively, whereas in prior years, most of the R&D went into how to make solar cells and how to make panels cheaper. So that's been a big change. The panel itself going forward is going to be sort of a commodity and a relatively inexpensive portion of the total solar system.
Well, Dick, one of our...
But that being said, the costs have dropped to the point where in many regions... It's cost-effective to put solar into the grid right now.
Okay, well, here's a question on the cost from an emailer named Jake. He says, He's heard about Chinese solar cells being dumped on the market, causing prices to plummet in the last 2 years. He writes, I believe there was some talk about drastic tariff increases. Just wondering how this will affect the long-term viability of solar. As if the prices climb again, solar could become less cost-effective. Will the market stay stable, or are we in a solar bubble?
We think the cost of modules will stop descending as fast, cascading down as rapidly as it has been, but will hold relatively steady for the next 5 years or so. That would be our prediction.
And is Jake onto something when it comes to Chinese solar cells being dumped on the market, or is that not right?
Well, it depends on your view of what dumping is.
That's a loaded term, I guess, yes.
Yeah. I mean, my view is that the Chinese made tremendous progress in how to drive the cost of manufacturing out and really showed the industry how it's done. We had an industry prior to the emergence of the Chinese manufacturers that was really sort of a cottage industry run by engineers, kind of four engineers, and didn't have a mindset of massive commodity manufacturing. It was the Chinese that sort of, who were used to that kind of thing, came in and showed us how to do it. And as a result, the non-Chinese manufacturers have been scrambling to sort of learn how to do this and catch up. But I don't think it's really fair to say that that they dumped panels onto the market.
Okay, and then in other words, it sounds like, and I think the panel seems to agree, that classify that however you want, but if the cost has come down rather sharply in 2 years, it doesn't mean that it's going back up, that it's likely to stabilize. Susan?
I think it's also important to note that China is installing an enormous amount of solar. They're not just manufacturing it. In 2013, they installed 12 gigawatts of solar. That's in a single year, which is a record for any country in any 1 year. And it is three times the UK's solar capacity and almost equal to the total U.S. solar capacity. So it's not just a case of them fabricating panels and shipping them all over the world. They're also really kind of setting the standard in terms of installation.
So. All right. So this is our solar roundtable. It's a great panel answering your questions. We're going to get to the phones in just a moment, and we are going to try to address a lot of the common questions, some of either the cynicism or the doubts that have come up, maybe some of the myths and rumors about solar that come up. But before we get there, let me at least hit one more point, because I know people, they heard Sam talking about the fact that it does depend on installation. You can't just put an average price. And I don't think that's a dodge, Sam. I think that's a fair answer. But at the same time, Susan, it's not unlikely that if an average listener on this program calls and wants an installation, it could be $25,000, $30,000 right now.
The $25,000 to $30,000 price is the, I guess, off-the-shelf, for lack of a better word, price that doesn't always take into account the tax subsidies, the grants, and all of the other cost reduction measures that are available both, you know, in Rochester, Monroe County, and in the larger New York State area. So while, yes, that is $25,000 to $30,000 is an accurate off-the-shelf price, most people are going to be able to put solar on their house for substantially less than that because of these initiatives.
The source on, by the way, on this is the National Renewable Energy Laboratory estimates that the cost of putting solar panels on the typical American house has dropped 70% in the last 15 years, from nearly $90,000 to under $30,000. But again, when it comes to tax credits and government support, this is a common question. I would ask, let me start with Susan on that then. If I'm a homeowner and I'm interested. We're going to talk about the business side of it first in a moment, but first for the homeowners, what do they need to know about ways to bring that cost down?
Well, it's not the easiest process to go through by yourself. So if you're a homeowner who's investigating this and trying to get information, I fully recognize that there's not really one central way to get this information. That's one of the things that my foundation, RockSpot, is working on doing, is getting all of this information together so people can have an easy answer to that question. I highly recommend working with local installers like Sam's company and others who are very knowledgeable about what is out there and what is available, and they can really help bring the price point down in a way that you, my, even myself, the average person, might not be able to find alone just looking on the internet.
And Sam, this isn't, I'm not trying to tee you up a softball for you and your company. This is an honest question. When you've got customers who call and say, okay, but if it is $20,000 right now or $25,000, when does that become cost effective? It's the same kind of question people had when they say, well, if I buy a Prius and gas costs X, at what point do I start, you know, essentially making money out of the deal or with an ROI? What's the kind of ROI for somebody putting solar on their home right now? How long does it take and what kind of savings are we talking about?
Yeah, and first off, just to mention, because it is so complicated, it's become fairly standard in the residential industry to offer a free evaluation where we come to the house to kind of crunch some numbers with you. For the majority of our clients that have a good solar resource and an ideal scenario for a solar project, a big turning point in my mind for the solar industry is when that ROI for a homeowner dropped below 10 years, when before it was, you'd really have to push the green attributes alone. You can now include a realistic ROI that leaves 15 years of remaining warranted production on your modules, such that it starts to make more financial sense. And certainly that's, we can do better than that on larger commercial projects where the cost to install comes down even further.
Dave, how often does ROI come up for the work that you're doing?
Probably less often. We're less close to the end of the end user.
Yep.
But you know, it still ends up being, I guess, our perspective for being in solar and for doing this is that it's important to be in. I think it's important for the local economy to have companies like ours doing it. But yeah, we. Well, as I was saying before, we do get questions on our website from people who are interested in that, but we're further back in the chain.
Here's a question from a listener: when it comes to solar, what happens to energy the solar panels create if your household doesn't use it? Can it be saved and put toward future bills? Can it offset your energy bill going forward? Do you get any credits? Let me start with Sam.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. In a sense, you're using the grid as a bank, and you can make deposits during the summer months or when you're not using energy, and then you can take a bank draft of energy during the winter months or when your system is off at night, for example, or under our deep Rochester snow from time to time.
Okay, well, speaking of the Rochester snow, I know Bill in Rochester's waiting to talk about the feasibility of solar in a climate like Rochester's. Bernard of Fairport's on the line. We've got more listener questions coming up. Let's take a very short break, 60 seconds, and we're going to come back with our solar roundtable. If you're just joining us in studio, we have Dave Levy, the Director of Research and Technology for NatCore Technologies here in the Rochester area. Sam Mason's here from SED, that's Sustainable Energy Development in Ontario. Susan Spencer is here, the founder of Rockspot, that's online at rochesterspot.org. And on the line, we've got Dick Swanson, the founder of SunPower, one of the world leaders in silicon solar cells and modules. So a great panel answering your questions, short break, and those questions answered next on member-supported public radio. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and we're talking not only to one of the national leading experts, Dick Swanson, on the line with us, but also getting a sense for what's going on locally. And when I say Ontario, by the way, with SED, that's Ontario, New York. just northeast of Rochester, not, Sam, not Ontario, Canada.
Correct.
The host should have made that clear very early on, but it's right here in the Rochester area. And let's get to some of our listener questions. This is Bill in Rochester. Bill, thanks for calling.
My pleasure. Gentlemen and lady, I want to say thank you for all the work you're doing to bring solar power to our country. We really need it. What is the feasibility of it in Rochester? Will it make sense for me to put solar power on my house?
Are you talking about feasibility in a colder climate?
Exactly. I'm sorry. I should have been more clear.
Okay, Bill. Bill, thanks for the call. And from there, okay, let's just go around the room. He's talking about colder climate and also maybe cloudier climate. We hear that question all the time. I'll start with Susan. We'll go around the room and finish with Dick. Go ahead, Susan.
So from a very broad perspective of material development, the solar systems that are available now don't just absorb visible light. They're able to absorb panchromatically along the light spectrum. So they're able to collect UV light and some near-infrared and infrared light. So this means that even though there are clouds, the solar cell will still be able to function. It will still be able to collect photons and generate electricity from them. So from a broad materials perspective, that's my answer.
Dave, are the materials improving? And is that part, again, what NatCore is doing on this scale?
Yeah, we've been looking a lot at the absorption, for instance, and Susan's exactly correct. So you have solar cells that absorb, and the current ones do now absorb better in all parts of the spectrum. So on a cloudy day and with diffuse light, you're still going to generate some electricity. And then I think a lot of it comes down to this economics question. As with prices continually going down, you're going to have a lower number of effective sun hours in Rochester, but ultimately at some point the price will still make it work.
Sam, you probably get this question a lot. You know, why would I do solar in Seattle or Rochester?
Right, and the short answer is yes. And the longer answer involves, again, a site visit to make sure that your site is viable, not directly underneath a large tree, for example. And oftentimes, folks in the industry, I'm surprised it hasn't been brought up yet, is we point to Germany as a country that's leading the world in installations and has a comparable, if not worse, climate than we have here.
Yeah, taking a look at the source for this information here from the International Energy Agency, total installed photovoltaic capacity, Germany by far the leader, almost twice as much as any other country, then China, then Italy, then Japan, then the United States. So the United States sitting at about a third of where Germany's installations have been for total photovoltaic capacity. And then those other countries ahead. So, yeah, those aren't all sunlight bastions and warm climate, right, Sam? Right? Have you had customers cut down trees just to create more less canopy space?
Yes, and it's always an interesting predicament for those of people like me who've kind of come into the industry from kind of a more an environmental perspective. We often have this discussion with the homeowner of, oh, the tree or the solar, which is, but certainly that is a result of that site visit, as I mentioned before, could be here's a trim that you can do, and here's how it affects your ROI.
Dick Swanson, let me ask you a question that kind of piggybacks off this discussion, because it sounds like the concern about cloud cover or climate is maybe misunderstood sometimes in solar, but there's also a common dissent about availability. I mean, I'm reading on various websites of people writing about concerns about solar energy. Here's one that says, quote, although solar energy is a great source of energy, it can be unavailable and unreliable sometime. We need to remember that on our spherical Earth, receiving different amount of light during the day and throughout the year make it hard to retain constant energy supply. Moreover, our current devices require a huge surface of panels in order to collect a small amount of energy, making it unachievable. Thoughts on that?
Well, it certainly it is achievable, and it's being achieved as we speak. So I think that's not actually the case. But it's also true that solar is an intermittent source of energy, as is wind. And utilities are learning how to deal with that. That's going to become one of the big frontiers of research and over the next decade or so is how to integrate these sources of energy into the grid that supply energy when they want, not necessarily when you want it. But that being said, solar is unusually well-suited because it generally produces more energy on hot summer days when air conditioning loads are the highest. So there is a correlation, broadly speaking, between the demand for energy and the supply from solar. However, you still have to use the utility as a giant battery, as was mentioned. But in regard to variability of the resource with location, it's easy to get too strident about that. For example, the worst part in the U.S. has half as much solar availability as the best parts in southern Nevada, for example. So it's only about a 2-to-1 difference in availability. On the other hand, the retail electricity cost throughout the U.S. varies by much more than just a 2-to-1 difference. So it's really a question of how much your local electricity costs you, as well as how much your local resource is. And as pointed out, the best spot in Germany, in the southern Bavaria, is actually worse than the worst spot in the U.S., such as Seattle. So you can be done in fairly cloudy regions, obviously.
Let me grab another call. This is Bernard in Fairport. Go ahead, Bernard.
Hi. You brought up the topic that I was concerned about. That is the return on the investment. And I guess my point is that you need to examine, and I realize this is complex, but you need to examine more the return based on how you implement these systems. So, for example, if you're going to spend $25,000 to put solar cells on your house, that's kind of a very simple look at this, because you're also then creating an environment or changing the environment, and that's going to have a return on the investment. And when you get ready to sell it, how much are you going to get back on the fact that your house has solar heat? So it just seems to me that this is a very complex thing, and it's kind of it's not good to say it's $30,000 to install when you have to look at the whole problem. And in fact, the energy utilization has to be looked at as the whole problem. It has to be a combined system, not a single system. And that complexity makes it, seems to me, this very hard to market. And I'd be interested in knowing, when you go to talk to somebody about solar cells, do you talk simply about their house, or do you talk about the overall system? And is that accepted by people? Thanks very much. Very complex, but I appreciate the topic.
Yeah, thank you, Bernard. Who wants to start on this one here? Susan, go ahead.
Sure. So thanks for the call, Bernard. I think to start thinking about your question to make sure that I address it properly, it sounds like you're talking about when solar is installed, that there's the system that you're speaking of, I'm assuming, is the grid and kind of the larger network of energy that the solar system needs to interface with. But it also sounds like you're talking about what it is like for the person living there in terms of resale value for the house, et cetera. I am not by any means an expert in real estate, so I don't necessarily feel qualified to answer that question. If we do look at it, however, from the perspective of a homeowner who has purchased a home and is going to be living there for, let's say, 20 to 25 years for the duration of their mortgage, I think what Sam and I are speaking about in terms of return on investment is a simplistic look where we're saying that you will not be the panels themselves will pay for themselves within 10 years and under 10 years in most cases. So you then still have this, you know, 10 to 17 year window where your panels are under warranty and you are essentially getting free energy. So I agree that it's a complex situation when you consider the entirety of the system for the homeowner. But I also think that the return on investment portion can be broken down simply without losing any nuance or becoming inaccurate.
It's a very interesting question on selling a home again, because solar cells on houses are still rare in this country, and that's perhaps going to change decently rapidly. So we'll see more of that question come up. But I know if I'm a home buyer, Well, that's Dave, wouldn't that be attractive to you?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. We bought a home that had solar panels on it, and they needed to be replaced. But I guess an interesting thing, and this is just a personal observation, is that the more rare they are, the more it might be something that for certain home buyers could be a detractor. And the more common they become, the more it will be an absolute plus. The newer the systems are that are on, the more it'll be an absolute plus. And so I think what the caller was saying, which kind of I agree with, if I interpreted his question right, is that there's a bunch of intangibles. And the more those intangibles become a positive thing, the more you say, well, I've got a return on investment. I calculate that out and I know that I've got my investment. But the intangibles make it an even more attractive deal.
All right. And there's a lot of sort of follow-up questions based on that. Now, Bernard was talking about, again, looking beyond just the sticker price now, seeing more broadly. Well, here's an email from Will, and I want to read what Will writes. And I'm sure that what I'm about to read is something that our panel, Dick included, has heard many times, but I'm going to read it anyway. Will writes, although it might sound strange, solar energy in its current form can be harmful to the environment. First, the materials used for the production of the panels and the methods of production are very unfriendly to the environment. Second, the large surfaces consume a huge space. Increasing the use of solar power will cost space wasted on solar panels. I don't know exactly what that means. But third, he says, increasing the reflecting surface of Earth might cause the phenomenon of reflecting the sunlight out, causing global cooling. This is not a joke. Global cooling looks good at first glance, might be horrific in the future. Messing with Earth's climate was never a good idea, not to mention the effect that such a phenomenon might have on plants and photosynthesis, which are the basis for life. Okay, global cooling. Susan Spencer, start there.
Okay, thank you, Will, for the email. I'm actually going to work through those points sequentially,
yeah,
if it's all right. So
the
first one was...
The materials used for the production of solar panels and the methods of production are unfriendly to the environment.
So I think that Will brings up a great point that was very true 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, in terms of manufacturing technologies and processes. They've required a lot of heat. They've required a lot of water. But we now, and this is something that we actually specialize in here in Rochester, we consider the technology from start to finish. So this is called a life cycle analysis. And what the life cycle analysis does is tell us exactly how we can make the technology more friendly. And this has been a huge push for the last 10 years at a minimum, and perhaps Dick has some more insight into that as well. But the technology benefit is often seen to outstrip the technology cost, especially when compared to traditional fossil fuel methods of powering our economy.
All right, so let's start with that point. Dick, you've seen technology change in this score. Will is saying that harmful to environment, but Susan's essentially saying that's an outdated concern, yes or no?
Well, no, it's certainly one that's being addressed and very actively so. For example, SunPower has just achieved a sustainability certification by an agency that looks into all of these kinds of things. It's certainly true that the waste and consumption in building panels has come down almost as fast as the cost of the panels has come down. So many times we see outdated information out there that really might have been true 10 or 20 years ago, but is not even close to being true today. For example, often people say, well, the panel doesn't produce as much energy in its life as it takes to make it. Well, you know, that was probably true during the space program, but panels rapidly return the energy that was required to make them today. So along with the cost coming down, all of the waste streams and energy consumption that goes along with manufacturing have come down commensurately, and that's how the cost has come down. So I think tremendous progress has been made along that front.
And Dick, what about the question on global cooling, reflecting sunlight out?
Well, I haven't heard that one. I have heard people concerned about global warming because the panels generally don't reflect light. They absorb light. And the whole idea with a solar panel is to absorb the light and convert it to electricity. So they're rather black in appearance. And in fact, that concern has been looked at quantitatively, and it's I have one paper, for example, that shows that the amount of global warming, if we were to power the entire planet with PV, is like a tenth of a percent, if I recall correctly, of the amount of global warming if we were to power it with fossil fuels from carbon dioxide emissions. So there is some impact, but it's trivial compared to the kind of impacts we're seeing from our current energy system.
This is our Solar Power Roundtable, a great panel, and with about 10 minutes left, I'm going to try to get to as many of your questions as are coming in, and there are a lot of great ones. A caller who did not want to go on the air asked if our panel would talk about something used in Germany a lot. The caller says that is solar thermal as opposed to solar voltaic, and maybe I'll ask technology guy Dave.
So I'm not familiar how they compare. Photovoltaic will generate electricity directly from using a silicon solar cell. Solar thermal, for instance, will reflect light to a central unit and, for instance, produce steam for use in a turbine or something like that. Our technology, for instance, what we work on is strictly photovoltaic. Seems to me that a photovoltaic has an opportunity to be distributable at any scale that you want to distribute it, whether it works economically or not, whereas the thermal maybe not so much. That's probably where my expertise ends on that topic.
Dave's with NatCore Technologies in Rochester, the Director of Research and Technology. Photovoltaic is most of the industry, at least domestically?
I think so, but I can't be sure of that.
Okay. Susan?
Currently, it is most of the industry domestically in terms of gigawatt hours generated by solar. A solar thermal does generate some, but it has not seen the type of rapid growth that the solar photovoltaic industry has, primarily because of what David was saying, that the solar photovoltaic is easily scalable, easily implementable, whereas the solar thermal technologies are they're a bit different, and they work a bit differently, and they're just not being promoted as heavily as the solar PV.
Some of our listeners have written in asking about need for replacement. Dave even mentioned buying a home and panels that need to be replaced. How long do they usually last? Sam, I'm sure this comes up often with you. Give me a sense for how long panels last if you want to put them on a home now, because people are going to be concerned that in 10, 15, 20, whatever years, you got to replace everything.
Yeah, well, and I think the important thing to remember is just because a warrantied product is warrantied for 25 years, it does not mean they just turn off after 25 years. It's my belief that after 25 years, you're out of warranty, your modules will still be functioning, and then the question is, are you upgrading with the latest advances.
Is there a concern for some that this is like buying an iPhone and you fear that a year or 6 months later you've got an outdated piece of equipment because the technology is getting that much better?
Well, certainly what comes up is hesitation in making the purchase for waiting for the next advance or the next best thing. But certainly what we would bring up is the local incentives. They are on their as they sunset out, it's likely better to take advantage of the incentives now with today's technology, and then
It's still a very effective investment, is what you're saying.
Still a very
yes,
effective
technology is going to get better. I mean that is progress. We can't stop progress, but it doesn't mean you should wait forever. Is kind of what Sam's saying. And Thomas writes to us on Twitter at Evan Dawson on Twitter. Is New York State doing anything for better purchase pricing for west-facing installations which generate during peak time? I don't know about that.
That's Susan? A highly specific question,
yes.
And I would be happy to look into it and give you an accurate answer. I can tell you New York State as a whole is beginning to engage with the solar industry and with solar installation as a real way forward to meet our energy needs and our energy demands. So I would say most likely yes, but I can't give you a specific answer on that question.
But again, part of what Susan's doing, Susan is the founder of RockSpot, rochesterspot.org, which is launching soon, I know, that's going to seek to sort of collect all these information to common questions. So hopefully soon we'll be able to answer that. Coming back to the phone lines, if we come to you, let's try to keep it moving because the hour is running out. This is Amy in Rochester. Go ahead, Amy. Go ahead, Amy.
Hi. I have a question. My stepfather and his family actually built the first off-the-grid house in Pennsylvania. So, again, they share a similar climate as ours. Their PV panel works wonderfully, and they've had almost no problems. But a very important concurrent question is energy storage. So they have no problem harnessing the energy, but what about storing it for evening use and cloudy day use? Their experience has been they have these, of course, very expensive batteries that are supposed to have an 8-year shelf life, and they have replaced them twice in 3 years. So if your panel could speak on energy storage and technological evolution with that, I would appreciate it.
Amy, thanks for the call. Where do you want to start here? Sam, go ahead, Sam.
I can start. I think there's a really interesting technological direction that we could take this, but in the short term, the part of the reason why the industry is in net metered or grid connected systems is because we don't have the advances in storage needed to make to answer that question at the moment. And what excites me is the advances in cell phone batteries, battery powered cars, and the industry is growing in that sense, and I think is a really fascinating place to be.
I would want to point out, Amy, I'm sorry, that the batteries are the thing that's holding your family back. It's good to know that the solar is working really well, though. That's fantastic to hear. The battery costs really are dropping substantially, and the reason for that is, again, one of the reasons why the solar panel costs have dropped. It's because the quality is improving. So I know that they have not been great, but the cost is dropping. And even here in Rochester, we have a ton of R&D going on for how to improve batteries and make them last longer and work better. It's a major focus for research right now, and I foresee answers coming down the pipeline within the next 1 to 2 years.
Ronnie in Rochester, try to keep it moving. Thanks, Ronnie. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. What progress is being made to help people with low income be able to have this option?
Thank you, Bonnie in Rochester. Go ahead, Susan.
I think that's that's a great question, and that's actually one of the things that my not-for-profit is working on, is building together a coalition of interested industries and universities that are dedicated to bringing the cost down for low-income families right here in the city of Rochester, most predominantly in the Crescent or the new Promise Zone neighborhoods. One of the biggest things that can be done is getting low-income families together with people who have a high level of knowledge about cost reduction and tax subsidies and grants that are available, because it really can make it affordable for almost every family.
Okay, so what we're seeing is sort of this surge in thing. Let's finish this. We've got 2 minutes left, and let me get some closing thoughts. Dick Swanson, the founder of SunPower, on the line with us. Dick, obviously a lot's changed in the decades since you've started, but give me an outlook 5, 10, 25 years from now, where you expect solar power to be in this country.
I expect solar to supply between 20 and 40% of our net electric load, and wind to supply between 20 and 40%, and the rest to be transitioning to natural gas. And I expect to see batteries become much more prevalent in the grid, hoping to smooth out the fluctuations in demand and supply.
Dave Levy with NatCor.
Yeah, I'm hoping in the next decade or so that at least Rochester, we continue to have small companies like mine and others that we see working in the area, that solar grows as Dick was talking, and that there's room for technological innovation at all levels and a lot in the area here.
Sam Mason, 10, 20, 25 years from now, we're going to be driving around, and how commonly are we going to see solar panels on houses?
And personally, I have the outlook that solar is going to be part of a larger movement of energy consumption reduction, and we like to say the cheapest watt of solar that you can put on your house is the one you don't need, and that It will be you'll be able to monitor your system from your phone. So your solar panels will be just a part of that larger system.
Susan, give us a glimpse of the future.
I think that within 10 years, every house in the Rochester city limits can have solar power on it. And I foresee a more decentralized neighborhood cluster model that will promote a lot of community building right here in the city of Rochester and help us become energy independent.
RochesterSpot.org is Susan's foundation, among many. Susan wears lots of hats, but thank you for taking the time, Susan.
Thanks so much, Evan.
Dave Levy, quickly, how do they find NatCore?
How do you find it?
Online.
Oh, NatCoreSolar.com.
Sam Mason is with SED. Find SED online?
Yes, www.sed-net.com.
Dick Swanson, the founder of SunPower, thank you so much for taking the hour for us, Dick. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Nice. Great panel. Answered a lot of questions, and you know what? We didn't even get to all of them. So come back sometime very soon, and we continue to follow the solar boom here in Rochester and across the country. Short break, and we're looking at homelessness in Rochester next. Stay with us.